Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God. And I was just finishing up answering emails. Get hundreds of emails a day. Lots of questions out there. A lot of confusion about the gospel of the kingdom and what that's all about. A lot of misunderstandings. And of course, the devil loves it when people misunderstand because he can manipulate their thinking. And what does the devil really want? What's he, you know, we talk about the devil, Satan, Beelzebub, all this kind of stuff. What's his real motivation? What's he trying to accomplish? What's he trying to do to us? If we go back, I mean, is the devil an extraterrestrial? Yes. I mean, he's not from here. He's from somewhere else. Is he from another multiple dimension we call hell? Yeah, you could say that. I mean, what do we know about him? Does anybody have a photograph of the guy? So it's not like that. But there's some benevolent force in the world that creates life, and there's some malevolent force in the world that wants to control life, wants to manipulate it, wants to exercise authority over it, wants the world to screw up so that he gets dominion. And the world being the people of the world. And all of you who listen to us regularly know that there's four or five different Greek words in the New Testament alone that are all translated world, and they all mean something completely different, and none of them really mean planet. But the world that he wants to tie you up in is the world of man. One of the things we're told is to make no covenants, to have a covenant with God alone, the Creator, to make some sort of agreement with God. And I don't know that it necessarily has to be written out in legalese, but we have to come into agreement with God. And what is God? And we talked this morning about the name of God, but the name of God is the character of God, who He is. And we were made in His image, so that's the way we were intended to be, but we are remade by sin, which is something not in accordance with our original nature. You know, like cancer is the sin of the flesh. You know, I'm not saying you have cancer because you sin. I'm saying cancer is when your cells divide and become another identity other than what they were intended to be. Some tumor or cells are growing in your body that are not compatible with who you really are, with what the other cells of your body, and they're kind of gone, you know, your cells gone wild. They're doing something other than what they're supposed to do. They're becoming and operating and being reborn in another identity, and we call that identity cancer. There's lots of different kinds of cancer. And we were made as individuals, as a whole individual made of millions of cells. We were made in the image of God originally. Now we've been remade by sin. Sin is an interruption of the actual code that God placed in us to make us who we are. And that code is both spiritual and physical. And when we say physical, we're also including electrical and chemical, structural, and you know, it's just amazing. You know, if you delve into cellular studies to study the actual cell of a body and how it breaks down in the DNA and the millions of little connections that are made every time the double helix zips and unzips in your body, it's just absolutely phenomenal. The levels of immunity that are built into every cell, the ability to communicate, the ability to reproduce. I mean, from two little tiny cells, growing in the womb of a woman, a baby is created. It just isn't just a blob. Those cells begin to break. I mean, the original two cells, they begin to break up and they split and become 4 cells and 8 cells and 16 cells and thousands of cells. But it's just not a mass. It's just not a blob. They actually know to create a liver and fingers and fingernails and hearts and valves and cells and, kidneys and skin and bone and it knows all this. All that information is codified in those original 2 cells, which become 1 cell, 1 flesh. And they produce a child. It's just phenomenal. And then if you look inside that cell, there's huge amounts of chemistry and immunity and passing of food in and out of the cellular wall and repairing the cellular wall. It's just absolutely a miracle, but life finds a way to make that all happen consistently, uniformly, according to a code, according to a pattern. And when we were originally created with mind and body and soul, we were created in the image of God. And when we diverse or stray from the ways of God, that pattern of God, that character of God, that name of God, we began to become something else. We began to become distorted. Our thinking is altered. Our physical bodies can be altered. Actually, everybody thinks that, DNA, it was definitely this guy because DNA matched. And generally speaking, that's pretty accurate, except for DNA can change. Did you know that? Your DNA can change. It isn't necessarily the same at the time you die that it was at the time you were born. As you change spiritually, your DNA will turn on and turn off certain elements of the string and cause other things to happen. A lot of people say, I don't believe that. Well, we know that there are diseases that suddenly will turn on, that if someone has a DNA proclivity to certain diseases, and that they can actually check for the genetic markers and they say, yes, you're liable to get this disease. And then at a certain age, certain time in their life, all of a sudden, presto, bingo, the disease turns on and becomes active. Old age is a disease that seems to turn on. I mean, why doesn't the cells continually reproduce a young person? I mean, isn't it the exact replica? No, something is changing. Something turns on. Age is programmed into you because... why? What's programming the DNA? Well, when people get sick, people say, doctors are all agreeing now that the attitude of the individual has a lot to do with whether or not they're going to get well. If they have a bad attitude, their immune system doesn't work as well. Their healing system doesn't work as well. Just by their attitude. Well, if you make spiritual choices, are you turning on or off DNA? Are you changing the way you are? And if, as individuals, when you make these choices and go down certain paths and begin to think in a certain way, are you changing the community around you? I mean, I've been married a long time, have kids. Kids are all home-taught. They've been around us. And it is not uncommon for one of them to be thinking a question and somebody else suddenly start answering that question. That is not all that uncommon in our household. And they didn't say anything out loud and there was nothing going on. We're just driving in a car and all of a sudden somebody is answering a question that somebody else is asking in their heads. Now, they didn't hear the other person thinking, but there's some sort of connection because they've grown up together, they've They've been so familiarized with each other that we are interconnected. We actually know. I mean, my grandmother was that way. She suddenly one day said, go find my mom. My mom was a teenager, about 16 years old. And that was in the days where you didn't need a driver's license to drive a car. And suddenly my grandmother made the men of the household go out and find Laura, my mom. Go find her. There's a problem. And sure enough, they go out, and she had run a car that she'd borrowed from her uncle and had run it into a ditch. She was okay, but it shook her up a little bit. And going too fast down them North Dakota roads. And she just knew, you know. I had a neighbor who woke up in the middle of the night, grabbed his face, and he says, my glasses are broken, my glasses are broken. And his wife said, what is the matter? And he says, suddenly I had a dream, and I was wearing my glasses, and I could see broken glass in front of my eyes. And they looked at the clock, and they knew they had to get up about 4:30. They were dairy farmers. And he was all shook up, could hardly go back to bed and go to sleep. He really had a bad night. At that very moment in time, his daughter was killed in a head-on collision where she was thrown through the windshield. And he woke up seeing that image from sleep. Because there's an interconnection between him and his daughter. And, you know, it was... You know, it's just one of those things that happens. And he knew something happened, but he couldn't quite tell what was the matter, but he couldn't go back to sleep, and he was troubled by it and everything. And then, of course, the next day, they find out his daughter was killed in a head-on collision miles and miles away. And these kinds of things are real, and they happen to people who are sensitive to them. And the truth is, a lot of times they happen to people who don't think they're sensitive to them, and they don't even know why it's happened. They get feelings, they have emotions, they get angry, they get frightened, they get, you know, my dad said there was a fellow that he would see once in a while in work, and the guy, their paths would cross, and he says every time that guy was in the room, he seemed like a perfectly normal, nice guy, talked well, never caused any problems, but whenever my dad would meet him, my dad said he would break out in a sweat. My dad would break out in a sweat, like there was something going on. And he just watched it. He thought that was peculiar, but he didn't know what it was. Still to this day, I can't tell you, but the point is, something in people has an effect in the people around them. And so what I'm bringing this back to is something we've talked about often on the show, is this collective consciousness. You know, the 100th monkey. You know, two groups of monkey on completely separate islands begin to change their behavior on one island, and then suddenly when they get to a certain number, all the monkeys on that island change their behavior. Monkeys on a completely different island, same kind of monkey, but miles away at sea, this is off the coast of Japan, start doing the exact same thing. Water buffalo in Australia do the same kind of thing. They all, everywhere, they suddenly get an idea and they start doing it. Migrations. How do the birds know what time it is? What's turning on in them? How and why the passenger pigeon disappeared from the face of the earth? Well, they were hunted, but they needed that collective flock, noise and everything else, in order to maintain themselves as a species. When that was gone, they were gone. Well, today, there's never been more people on the face of the earth than there is right now. And unfortunately, many, many of those people are subject to ideas and feelings and thoughts of the people around them. And so what's happened is, you know, like TV has become a tremendous power. I remember years ago when can't even remember the show now. It was one of the early miniseries. And I didn't have TV and wasn't watching any of the TV, but everybody else, everywhere you went, you heard them talking about this miniseries. And the characters that were in it. And so, at a given point in time, all across the country, in different communities, many of the people, if not most of the people, were sitting down watching the exact same events. If there was something frightening happening, if there was something sad happening, if there was something of some emotional nature, they were all being affected at the same time in their homes, watching the same imagery and experiencing the same conditions as far as what they were observing on TV. We gave an example years ago of there was suddenly 700 children brought into emergency rooms and into doctors all across Japan at one time, within a few hours of each other. It wasn't because Fukushima blew up or any of those kinds of things years ago. It's because they watched the same cartoon on TV, a very popular cartoon. And so millions of people in Japan were watching it. And the kids, literally, some of them went into convulsions because of the flashing lights on watching on TV. I don't believe it was just the flashing lights. I'm sure that had a great deal to do with it. It was, they were designed to get a reaction. They got a reaction, and many of the kids were, you know, vomiting and actually spacing out and eyes rolling back. It was enough so that you had hundreds of people going to the emergency room with their children. And it was all connected to watching this cartoon at a given time in Japan on TV, because they're all in one time zone there. So they're all watching at one time. But I believe also the emotional trauma that was taking place in all these kids was actually affecting other kids simultaneously. We call it mass hysteria. And you think mass hysteria has to be caused by, you know, hundreds of people being in a room, you know, or 1,000 people being at a stadium and everybody's trying to get out and there's all this emotion and you know, people are crushed to death in the hallways trying to get out because, you know, it's just the end of the game and everybody's rushing to get out. And somebody starts pushing and shoving, and before you know it, you got people getting all hysterical and pushing and shoving to the point where people are being actually killed. They call that mass hysteria. Or the witch trials back in Massachusetts many years ago. Well, reality is, in our society today, we're going to see more and more of that. Because the veil between people is shifting. There is a connection being made between people. So that collective unconsciousness is becoming stronger and stronger. It's influencing whole massive segments of the population. You know, before you know it, people will suddenly want to invade another country. And if they were to look at the situation reasonably, they'd say, well, there's not enough reason, and it's not going to bring anything good about it. But they're not looking at it reasonably. They're looking at it in an emotional state. And so people are, we've seen this before, they flash images up on the screen, and they repeat the same words over and over again, and everybody's watching TV and Fox News and what have you, and the whole society is moving in a particular direction of thinking. And then later on, you know, half the people, when they find out it was a really bad idea, and they're, you know, like there were no weapons of mass destruction, and you know, the only poison gas they found, we sold them, and you know, somebody was just writing an email a little bit before the show, and they were saying that their reason, somebody asked, this is, why did we have to go in, and this is someone, a citizen of the United States, why did we have to go in and fight Saddam Hussein? How is he a threat to me? They didn't mention the weapons of mass destruction. That's pretty much been poo-pooed out of existence, although there are a few people who still cling to that. But he said because he had plates to print Federal Reserve notes, and he could bankrupt this country. And I thought, what nonsense. What nonsense. You know, having the plates isn't the key. It's having the paper. And the fact is Iraq didn't even print their own money. They weren't in the printing business. They had another whole agreement. It's all tied up with England, although they were starting to move in that direction. What they were about to do, which is what got them in real serious juju, so to speak, is they were going to denominate their oil not in U.S. dollars. You see, years before, Kissinger went around to all the big oil OPEC and everything and got everybody to denominate their oil in U.S. dollars. If you were going to buy oil, you were going to buy it in U.S. dollars. So that made U.S. dollars very valuable because everybody wanted to buy oil in U.S. dollars. And because that was the agreement that went around, Kissinger set this all up. It's just a matter of history. But he was going to change it so that he was going to denominate their oil in euros. Well, that would mean that Germany, I mean, most of their oil is sold to Europe anyway. So that would mean that Germany doesn't need as many U.S. dollars. They can just buy them right in euros, and it would be a great boon for euros. But it could cause a crash of the U.S. dollar, and nobody wanted to see that. So what happened, and this is just a matter of history, if you want to actually look up history or if you want to just watch the news and go along with the standard thinking, you could actually study the fact that the United States gave permission to sell side drilling oil equipment to Kuwait. You can't, U.S. government, corporations cannot sell side drilling oil equipment without State Department approval. Why? Because people could drill from their property over into somebody else's property. It's like having those little locks that can, you know, those little master lock things that can open up a door anywhere, you know. Burglar tools. You can't own burglar tools unless you're a locksmith, so you have to get permission. And it's the same with side drilling oil equipment. But the U.S. sold it to Kuwait, not so that they could drill out into the ocean or under a lake somewhere, which is why you usually have that kind of stuff, but so they could drill across their border into Iraqi oil fields. Everybody knew it. Saddam Hussein brought it to the United Nations' attention. He brought it to the ambassador of the United States. He brought it to the State Department's attention, all through official channels, all a matter of record. And every time, the United States said that they were not interested in Arab-to-Arab border disputes. They had no interest in that. Meanwhile, Schwarzkopf was planning to invade Iraq. He had been making those plans for years. His father had invaded Iraq during World War II, and he was all excited about it, so he was preparing to invade Iraq. Kuwait hadn't been invaded yet. But eventually they wouldn't stop. They just kept thumbing their nose at Saddam Hussein, so he invaded. Used to be part of Iraq anyway, to go in there. But the people's minds were completely somewhere else and being orchestrated somewhere else. And their attitudes and their emotions and their commitments were somewhere else. And they're still, the residue of that is still clinging in society and can be manipulated. But what I'm really concerned about, and what we'll talk about in the second half of the show, is a much deeper, more spiritually intrinsic trend where you can move whole masses of the population in a particular way, in a particular way of thinking, and actually into a particular morality of conscience, where you can no longer see the evil as evil. Now evil is good. And actually, it can go so far as to think that good is evil. And that's what can happen to your mind if you begin to give yourself over to these external emotional stimulations of society. You know, and I mentioned TV and you know, things like that. But there's a lot of other things that can trigger this spiritual emotional response to actually make you go nuts. Make the whole society literally go nuts, crazy, doing crazy things. And we'll talk about that. And most important, we're going to talk about how to guard yourself against that so you are not swept away with this mass hysteria, this 100 evil monkey syndrome that can befall whole nations, even the whole world. And we'll talk about that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after this brief break.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, and we're talking about this ability to create mass hysteria, not only on, you know, yelling fire in a theater kind of level, but actually creating it on a global level, where the whole world goes crazy, kind of everybody goes off their rocker. And I can tell you one thing that might just do that is if the planet started to sway to and fro. You know, we have a great deal of our feeling of security depends upon things around us. You know, I mean, since we were little kids, a kid won't go to bed without their blanket or their teddy bear because this thing gives them a sense of security. I guess it's kind of the old umbilical cord syndrome. You know, you've got to be connected. I mean, it's as simple as holding your parents' hand. When you go into a strange place, you want to hold that hand. It makes you feel secure. It's like when I was teaching my kids how to walk, and they would hold on to your finger as they walked around, and they thought they needed your finger in order to keep their balance. And I would take, and I would let them hold one of those old-fashioned clothespin that's about the size of a finger, and they would hold that, and I would hold the clothespin, and they would walk holding the clothespin, and then I would let go of the pin, but they still felt the grip of the pin, so they were still able to walk. You know, that because it gave them a sense of security, they were able to walk securely. And eventually they grew out of that. They don't carry the clothespin anymore, but when they were first learning, they needed that little crutch, that little comfort, so to speak. Well, we have comforters too. Today, I mean, people have religion as a comforter. They have, lots of different things can add to that feeling of comfort. You know, there are guys who never go out without their hat on. In this country especially, I never wore a hat till I come to the high desert. But in the high desert, you're 4,000 feet or more in the air, 6,000, 7,000, depending on what hill you're on top of. And you have a tendency to wear a hat, just by nature. And if you go out without your hat, you almost feel naked. And that's a part of your physical surroundings that makes you feel secure. And I've been in numerous earthquakes, and I've been at sea in small boats. And at sea in small boats, it'll bounce around and you get used to it. But when the earth starts bouncing around, that's kind of a spooky thing. So, of course, the earth itself is not the only thing we have that gives us a sense of security yet. Paychecks, the lights being on, the sky being blue, whatever. You know, all these things that we've become used to will give us a sense of security. And if something were to pull that away, if that would suddenly diminish or disappear, what do you have? You become like a little child. You become afraid. You become insecure. Now, it may be on a very little level, but if you start taking enough stuff away, and so therefore you have to readjust. I mean, like when people lose their money during the Great Depression, people were jumping off of buildings. They lost their money. They couldn't live without their money. People can't go to the mall. They have withdrawal. I mean, I have people come out here and visit years ago, and we had no TV, no radio, no computers. And they're pretty simple. We were sheep farmers on the high desert, and relatives would come out to visit, and the young ones anyway, the teenage crowd. And we found one of them curled up on the bed in a prenatal position trying to get reception on the radio. They needed to get that radio working. I can't hear any. And because that was a sense of security, and it was gone. It was taken away. And so that's one way to start people down the road to mass hysteria. You know, if you walk into a grocery store in Russia 20 years ago and you saw empty shelves, no big deal. They're always empty shelves. They're always looking for a line to get in to buy something, you know. And now it's changed quite a bit in the Soviet Union. So sometimes that way in Cuba, but it's even getting better there. But in America, if you walked into a grocery store and the shelves were empty, that's a little spooky. I mean, you come into a grocery store and just see all the canned goods pushed to the back and hardly, you know, or somewhat baking, one of what, you know, like during a trucker strike a number of years ago. That's kind of eerie. Now, it doesn't really bother me. I'm the kind of guy that could take off across the country with a backpack, and I'm fine with it. I'm not tied to physical things as much as a lot of other people. But to a lot of people, that would be devastating. I remember earthquake down in California. People, it was pandemonium to go to the grocery store. I had to go down for my folks to get some things because they were short, and they just weren't ready. And they, for an earthquake, where all the power was out, and the water stopped flowing out of the tap, and it was, you know, it was going to be that way for days. And they wanted me to go down and pick up a few things. Well, everybody else was down there picking up stuff, and people were ramming into other people and filling carts and hoarding this and that and the other thing. And it was, you could cut the panic with a knife that was in the atmosphere of that. But I was very calm, but everybody else was going nuts. And but that was a minor thing. It was just a localized area. And, you know, there were parts of the San Fernando Valley that still had water, and other parts still had power. And there were parts that had no power. And but what if we did this, you know, all the way across the country? It would be crazy. But if you did it and you still had something, say you were taking away some of those senses of security and you still had somebody feeding you information, like all you have to do is this and all you have to do is that, and all we have to do is, you know, suspend the Constitution and we can get everything going again or whatever. I mean, not like anybody's using it anyway. It's not that big deal now. But whatever it is, I can't even imagine what they would come up with. I probably could if I wanted to waste my time. But the point is, we are attached to all these things that give us a sense of security. And anybody who pulls those things away or cuts us off from them, we become vulnerable to suggestion. That's how you hypnotize somebody. You actually get them, you distract them by creating an artificial situation, and then you get them to try to please the hypnotist, to begin to act upon what the hypnotist is telling them. And then they don't want to admit that they're not hypnotized, so they literally become hypnotized. They begin to take the next step, and the next step, and the next step. And before you know it, he's got them down on their hands and knees, barking like a dog, and can tell them to forget, and they will forget. And they're not in control. They've been totally hypnotized because they have been moved away from the place where they would normally make choices, and somebody was there to give them suggestions about doing things in a different way, and they start doing it, and they become committed, and they won't go back. I mean, it's like people who want to, like George Bush or Obama, I want to be bipartisan. I don't want to pick on a particular political figure because I'm apolitical in that situation. I don't think either one of them are probably doing the country any good, because what's going to do the country good is if you guys start thinking for yourself in an objective, honest, righteous sort of way. Doesn't matter who's in the White House or in Parliament or Congress or whatever country you're in. The important thing is that what is guiding you? What is moving you? Now this is, because we're talking about not just physical hysteria, emotional hysteria, but spiritual hysteria. A lot of people think studying religion will teach you about God. Studying, you know, books about God and religion and the Bible is going to teach you all about God. The truth is, that's not how you learn about God. I mean, you can certainly do those things, but you could go out and start farming and learn about God. You know, start taking care of animals and you'll learn about God. Start raising a family, you'll learn about God. It isn't an intellectual pursuit, and Christ was very specific about that. He said, it's not flesh and blood that reveals this, but my Father in heaven. How do you get the Father in heaven to reveal to you who he is? Because see, heaven and earth is going to shift and change and pass away. It's not going to disappear altogether. It's just going to change. The earth you know may change, and that when you look up in the sky, that may change, and when you look down the street, that may change. I mean, in the earthquakes in Japan, they looked down the street and lots of things were gone. They just weren't there anymore. It all changed. And that was a trauma to a lot of people. But God doesn't change. God is the same yesterday as is today. And he is a stable force, whatever that means. Well, whoever he is, I'm not going to define it. How do you find out about it? Well, you have to fast and pray, Jesus said. Now, what does that mean, fast and pray? Well, right now, you're heavily dependent upon, you know, what you see and what you eat and what you hear to give you a sense of stability. You know, your teddy bears and your blankets and your bank account and your nice car and your house and the shopping center and your job. These are all things that give you security. Your spouse, your friends, your family, they give you a sense of security. But these are all physical things, flesh and blood things that surround you. So how do you become aware of spiritual things? Well, this is what Christ was talking about. One thing is you have to be still. You have to learn how to sit and be still. Not be responding. Your body is a mass of reaction all the time. Stimulation and evil. If there's this force of evil, and of course I believe there is, and you can see evidence all around you, that it doesn't care what you do as much as it wants you to do it because you're responding to him or something outside of yourself. You're not responding to a spiritual guiding force. And remember what Jesus says, I shall build my church on this blessed thing in Peter, who knew something, could answer a question, not by the knowledge of men, not by flesh and blood, but by inner revelation of the Spirit. He was actually communing with God in the Spirit. And it revealed to him the answer to the question. And Jesus said, blessed are you, Peter, because you did this. And it's upon that knowing, that inner knowing, that I will build my church. So just as, you know, like I'll answer a question that my daughter is thinking about when we're driving in the car for, you know, an hour, and all of a sudden I'm answering her question, is because I knew that she was requesting this. Because there's a connection between me and her. So how do you get that connection between you and God? Well, one of the ways is a thing called Corban. The word Corban actually comes from a Hebrew word which means to draw near. So you want to draw near that stable thing, that God, that can guide you when all the physical things in the world are going awry and messing up and screwing up and falling apart. So how do you get near that spiritual thing which gave those things creation and therefore actually are the real thing? The spirit is real. It is the physical world that is created out of the spirit. Spirit made the physical world. So the spirit is actually, we have a tendency to think that spirit is some sort of ether and smog or fog, you know, a ghostly thing that's not real and has no substance to it. It is the spirit that is the real substance. It is the source of creation, but we don't know necessarily what that means, and I'm not going to get into all that right here, but the point is, how do we draw near that stable thing so that when all the world around you is going to pieces, you're still in a stable place and will not be swept away by the thinking of millions who are all in a state of panic. You see, because when all those people are in a state of panic, thinking panic thoughts, thinking fear, thinking anxiety, and this can actually be detected in electronic equipment. There are ways to actually see that this is going on. And when there's these traumas, it actually shows up. And we've talked about that before, too, in these, we'll have some guests on one of these days and they'll talk about some of that. But and we have talked about it on other shows. But what's happening is that this chaos is contaminating the thinking and feelings of all the people because they're not connected to a stable thing, that the rock of spirit that Christ was talking about when he talked about Peter, that in this being this rock, this inner knowing that can give you this calmness. How do we draw near that? Again, we ask the same question. Well, how you draw near that is fasting and prayer. There's that word again, but we haven't defined what that means, fasting and prayer. Fasting has to do with not reaching out for something. Food. You could be fasting from food. And I've seen people actually injure themselves physically because they overdid the fasting. Because it's not just about fasting from food. If food is extremely important to you, then fasting from food may be important to you. Within moderation. You don't want to become unhealthy. In most cases, just fast from the unhealthy foods. Just start eating good foods. But you also have to fast from something even more important. I mean, there's a lot of other things. Smoking. Fast from smoking. Fast from anything that might be unhealthy for you. But really what you have to fast from is the thing that has gotten you into trouble to begin with, that cut you off from God. Now, what cut us off from God? Originally, as the story goes. And what does the story mean? You ate something. You ate of the, was it an apple? No. A pear? No. You ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You decided for yourself that you were going to decide for yourself, and you cut God out of the equation. That's a vain thing to do. That's a willful thing to do. So what do you need to fast from? Willfulness. Trying to decide for yourself. Trying to figure it out on your own. Now, you're not going to, I can tell you to do that, but you can't do that unless you become humble in your heart. Be willing to fast in your heart from being willful, deciding for yourself. Wait upon the Lord. Now, how do you wait upon the Lord? How do you wait for Him to show you what to do? Well, again, it's back to that be still If you, and we'll teach you how to do that. But not on this show. Basically, what it is you just have to learn to sit still and be aware of the moment. You close your eyes. Stop all the input. You know, eyes is a big input source. You can't close your ears, so you'll still hear stuff. But your mind will project images on, in your mind, and thoughts and feelings will come up when you try to sit still. And when you see that, and this is ancient meditation that goes way back, but it's not the meditation, it's the attitude. You're repenting from the attitude of willfulness and moving in the direction of the attitude of something other than willfulness. What is the antithesis of wanting your own way? You know, all children, they want their way. Most adults want their way. That's why they vote. They want their candidate to give them their way. And the candidate's up there promising, I'll do it your way. And this one's over here promising, I'll do it your way. And they get people to vote for them, and then they do it their way anyway. So, but how do you, how, what is the antithesis of wanting your way? Serving others. That's right. You're trying to do something for others. Now, you can't just do anything. You want to do things for others that will actually help them. Improve their situation. Make life better for them. Do right by them. To make them more independent and less subject to that mass hysteria. Less dependent upon physical things. See, a lot of people think independence is I get all the physical things I need and I own them. And then now I'm independent. No. You're not independent. Independent is not needing all those physical things to begin with. And then nobody can steal it away from you. This is called the treasures in the kingdom of God. Is that you need to be seeking the real treasures, which is the willingness to sacrifice yourself. Sacrifice your own will. You know, not become slaves to others, but to become slaves to righteousness, where you want, willingly want to do what's right. And you don't care what the chips may be. You've committed yourself to doing what's right, not just what is comfortable, what feels good. You see, those words, you know, like Corban, of the Pharisees, made the word of God to none effect. Well, the Corban of the Pharisees was a system of social welfare. The word Corban comes from the Hebrew word that means to draw near. And it means to sacrifice for the purposes of serving society around you. Christ came to serve. You come to serve, do right by other people, take care of one another through faith, hope, and charity, not through force. And what happens is you begin to draw near the character of God. And it takes some introspection on your part to see how willful you become, how arrogant you become, how selfish you become. And be willing to see that without judging yourself. And that's one of the things we talked about in the two earlier programs today, is what that looks like. One of the very first thing, and he answered and saith unto them, he that hath two coats, let him impart to him that hath none, and do the same with food. He's telling it. John the Baptist is telling you this, so that you can get near the kingdom of God. And if you go back to the original verses on this, which we covered in earlier shows in detail, basically he's talking about people like Tiberius Caesar and Pontius Pilate and the Tetrarchs and all these guys, Annas and Caiaphas. And this system of social welfare that was being created by Herod. And he's saying, no, we're not going to go that way. We're going to operate by faith, hope, and charity. We're not going to force our neighbor to contribute to our welfare. So what you need to do if you want to be free from the panic and pandemonium that is coming, you have to turn around and go another way. We call that repentance. And that other way is to gather together for the purposes of providing the needs of your fellow man in society, the real needs, the essential needs of life to your fellow man through faith, hope, and charity. By seeking to do that, you're going to come face to face with your own selfishness, face to face with your own impatience, and you actually are going to become face to face with God. That's right. You're going to come closer to God. He's going to be audible to you, in a sense, spiritually audible to you, and you will be audible to him, because he says he's not going to hear you if you go the other way that everybody has gone for the last several hundred years. He says, I will not even hear you in that day. So if you want him to hear you, and you want to hear him, and you want to bring your minds close together, you have to gather together to start becoming the righteous mammon, the benefactors of society who don't exercise authority, who are willing to fast from some things, in other words, give up some of their life, in order that they may have life more abundant. And actually, it's coming to the point where if you do not learn that, you will die. That's right, you will die. You will not survive. And your children will not survive, and nobody will survive, and they'll all be dead. But fortunately, some people are changing. They are going the other way. They are doing something different. They are operating the way that God said to operate from the beginning. And, you know, in Proverbs it says, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Well, it's really late, but early and late, those are relative terms. Point is that you have to start seeking the righteousness of God. And you need to do it together, because if you don't do it together, who are you going to help? Are you just going to give, you know, drive by some homeless guy on the street corner who says he's homeless and hand him a $10 bill and then say, well, see, I'm a giving person. No, that's nonsense. Today, most people who are in need are supported by men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other. Many of those people call themselves Christians, but Christ said it was not to be that way with you. So therefore, you are not following Christ if it is that way with you. In Deuteronomy 5:10, he says, the showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. When Jesus was asked about eternal life, he says, thou knowest the commandments, keep them. What is one of those commandments? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. That means you should not be binding yourselves with covenants into systems that require that something be taken away from your neighbor to provide you or somebody else or your children or your parents with benefits. You should be binding yourselves together with love, with free will offerings, with faith, hope, and charity, in an organized way that you can keep control of, where you can actually take care of one another in a righteous way. And if you will do that, life will change for you. You will begin to see things that others don't see, and you will begin to become unaffected by things that panic other people. And when things start going to pieces, you will be connected to the collective consciousness that is close to God. You will still have free choice and free will, because God wants you to have free will. It's evil that doesn't want you to have free will. But you will be connected, and you will see a flow of life that will protect you more than a pile of beans and ammo in a shack up in the mountains. So anyway, that's our message today. I had no idea we were going to go that direction when the show started. But until we meet again, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.